please the court, I'm Dave Domina. I'm here on behalf of Rodney Chiloa. He is the defendant and the appellant in an action to establish one of those complicated prescriptive easements that some of your cousins of the appellate bench have called something that exists in a mass of weeds. This really is a complicated case because pinch points, which often present themselves to you, are never less pleasant than when the law considers whether it will do something bad to someone who did something good. And in this case, what happened is that Mr. Chiloa and his father were good neighbors, accommodating neighbors. They allowed others to use a roadway on the section line, or at least along the section line, on their rural Platte County real estate to gain access to a 7-acre recreational parcel along the river. This case is much different from a residential parcel, landlocked except by an easement in Keith County, in a case this court considered not so long ago. It's much different from a case in which there is no other access, there is an economic use, there is a consistent use, and there is a long and well-established need. Here, the concern for the owner of the 7-acre parcel is access seasonally, intermittently, on a limited basis, irregularly, and for a recreational purpose.
Is there not also hay planted there?
4 acres. 4 acres of hay, which is unlikely to be harvestable for a cost that will pay for moving the machines in and out to try to get that done. So that's really recreational too. Your Honors, this case is one in which we think there is no credible evidence that the Chiloas ever did anything other than permit others to use this property and never, ever thought anybody was claiming a right to do so until 2012.
Wasn't there evidence of assistance in maintaining the road and paying for locks and things like that that the lower court was made aware of?
There's evidence of assistance, financial and physical, in maintaining the roadway. There is evidence about the contribution more than the acquisition by purchase of locks that were used as keys on a gate that was sometimes open, sometimes closed, at Mr. Chiloa's decision. The evidence about the road was important to the trial court, and I think it's important to read it carefully. In this record that took 14 months to develop over several days of trial, the evidence about the maintenance of the road is about that much. And that evidence consists of a few questions and a few answers on a couple of pages that allow two different conclusions, but strongly support by inference the one that I draw and not the one that the trial court drew. And that's this. At a time when it was clear that Mr. Chiloa and his father were doing the lion's share of the work and experiencing the lion's share of the expense because they had the lion's share of the need, the permissive user decided to reciprocate good neighborliness and help with the road repair. There was never a claim of right out of that. These were people, being kind to one another, not claiming rights that came out of time. The only reason there was a disturbance in any of that is because the manner of use by the new owners in 2012 changed. Instead of being neighborly, the new owners started to be aggressive. There were more guests. There were more machines. There was more noise. There was interference. The character of the use changed.
Didn't the court decide, though, presented with that evidence, and then also presented with evidence that your client was just mad because he didn't get to buy the triangle himself?
Well, the court notes that there is evidence that my client had an expectation that he might inherit the triangle. And the court notes that he may have been angry that he didn't acquire it. But this is what made him angry. The people who did acquire it mistreated him. There's no evidence that he was angry that he didn't acquire it to own. He lives next to the river. There's no indication that he wants or needs these 7 acres for recreation, that he doesn't have all the access to the river that he wants. He's got his own cabin on the river, nearly adjacent. There's just no evidence of any of that kind of thing. What is clear from the record is that enmity developed here because of a change in behavior that did not start with Mr. Chiloa. But this isn't a case in which we're casting about to see who misbehaved in 2012, 13, or 14. The question is, was there an open, continuous, adverse, uninterrupted 10-year term during which, under claim of right, K&H or its predecessors, tacking with them, established permissive a prescriptive easement? And I think what's absolutely clear is that's not so. The people with historical interests in this title, including a witness who I cited several times in my brief, said it was a handshake deal. The witness next door, the owner next door, who'd owned the land for more than 50 years with Rod Chiloa and his father, who was a defendant in the case and then dismissed out, said nobody used that road without the Chiloa's permission. All of the historical users testified that the Chiloas gave permission. Now, Mr. Chiloa, who's accused of misconduct, tried to continue to be a good neighbor by making the point, look, if you'll get along with me, I'll try to get along with you. That led to the goat trail, the much maligned goat trail in this record. Mr. Chiloa certainly gave them a less desirable way to get to their property, and he did it gratuitously. But he had a point to make, which was,
can you give me generally the idea of where the goat trail is located?
The goat trail, Your Honor, you know, this disputed road is on the section line. If you look at the section line, and if I recall the directions correctly, go to the right, and the goat trail meanders through Mr. Chiloa's property. It isn't a straight line. It is a meandering line. It tends to hug the opposite boundaries and the edge nearest the river.
It was not shown on Exhibit 30, was it?
It is not.
Okay. Is it shown on any exhibit?
30? I don't think so. Okay. There's neither a survey nor a good quality description of it. Okay. There was some film of it and photographs. And we're not contending that these people should be relegated to that use. We're contending that under the rules that we think control the decision-making process here, the elements of a prescriptive easement simply aren't established. The most important is there was no adversity. There was no claim of right. There was a permissive use for many years. And now we have the Filoni versus Bay decision, which reverses the presumption that associates with use over a long period of time and makes it clear that unless this is wilderness property, and this isn't Thomas County, it's Platte County,
so
and that's
is,
important.
It is or is not wilderness?
It is not wilderness. Okay. The section line has a fence bounded on it. There's a county road that runs perpendicular to this road. This road is well established along a section line with properties built along it and dependent upon those roads. This is not an unenclosed area.
So is this more akin to an urban area then, if it's not wilderness?
I don't think it's important to draw a distinction between rural and urban because the distinction drawn by Filoni is between wilderness and otherwise. So, Your Honor, I would submit that that's the distinction this court must consider.
So is it what effect does Filoni versus Bay have on the position you are taking in this case?
Well, what I think it's pronounced Filoni. Filoni, I think, Your Honor, is important because I think that Judge Steinke misunderstood what it did to the law. I think that the rule before was that if there was a continuous period of uninterrupted use, there was a presumption that defeated permissiveness. And under Filoni, it's clear that the opposite is true. There is a presumption of permissiveness unless the area is wilderness. It must be overcome by clear and convincing evidence. Before Filoni, there was a very confusing array in the law where you establish the elements by clear and convincing evidence, you introduce some contrary proof by what appeared to be a greater weight of the evidence standard, and then you can't tell what happens with a shift in the burden after that. I think Filoni does away with
and
that.
Isn't that what the lower court found here, was that there was clear and convincing evidence?
Well, it mentions both standards of proof. At one point in the opinion commenting on Mr. Chiloa's conduct, it mentions greater weight of evidence. And in another, where it makes its findings about establishment of the elements, then Judge Steinke says they were established by clear and convincing evidence. But he also says any presumption of permission was overcome by sufficient evidence and doesn't repeat the standard. Judge Steinke is held in high regard by me and others, and I think he was struggling with this change in the law. We're asking you to reverse. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Judge Inbody. I'm going to second something that Mr. Domina said just now. Mr. Domina said just now that he has great respect for Judge Steinke, and so do I. I appear in his court on a weekly basis, and I don't think Judge Steinke misunderstood anything about Felony versus Davis, which was an urban driveway dispute between two neighbors whose garages had access to a common alley between their two properties. And Felony claimed that he had a right to back over onto Davis's driveway, and the judges said, no, there was no clearly established prescriptive period in this case, and besides that, what rules apply in rural areas don't necessarily or shouldn't apply in urban areas. And so I don't think Felony applies to this case because this is a rural area.
Excuse me, rural and wilderness are synonymous?
I have a little bit of Mr. Egley's problem. What did you say, Judge?
Wilderness and rural are synonymous?
Well, no, but this is pretty close to being wilderness. This is a four-acre tract, actually probably includes a little more than 4 acres. It's on a bend in the Loup River west of Columbus, and it's native habitat. It's native grass. It's trees. It's riverbank. It's sandbars. And it's got a little cabin on it. So it's a pretty wild area, if I can use that term.
Mr. Moyer, is it your position that your clients and the predecessor who owned this land used this right-of-way adversely to the owner of the land?
It's our position, Your Honor, that John Breedhoff acquired title to this property from the Union Pacific Railroad in 1903, which was long before Ben Shalala showed up on the scene. And they've been using this access ever since then to reach this property. And this property is a landlocked property. There's no other way to get to it unless you come down the river. And as you know, that's one of the criteria. If it's bounded by a stream, for a property to be landlocked.
But wasn't the use permissive?
There is no evidence in this record. I am sorry. I have to take very vehement issue with Mr. Domina. There is no evidence in this record that there was ever a permissive use. As a matter of fact, Rod Shalala himself never testified that he had to give anybody permission to use that property. My clients and their predecessors in title all had keys to a gate, which the evidence is undisputed that they put up and that they repaired.
So it was not open to the public. It was only open to those people who had keys.
That's right. And the keys came from my clients. That's pretty clear from the record. And Ben Shalala had a key, of course, but in order to access the property, and Rod had a key to access the property. The undisputed evidence in this record is that Harlan Siefkin, our predecessor in title, or K&H's predecessor in title, didn't like the lock that was on the gate and thought maybe there were too many keys around, so he got a new lock. He got the lock, and he put the lock on the gate, and then he gave a key to Mr. Shalala so that he could access the property.
So your position is it's not Mr. Chiloa who's given the permission.
Nobody has ever testified that that permission from the Chilohas was needed.
How about the neighbor next door who had been there forever?
Well, the neighbor next door you're talking about is Mr. Donahue.
Right.
And Mr. Donahue is not the one with the long memory in this case. And there's no doubt about this. You know, Breedehoft and Chiloa were friends and good neighbors. And there's no doubt that they were neighborly. But the undisputed evidence is, and I'm going to point you to the testimony of Robert Grimes' ex-wife. During the entire 19-year period that she was married to Robert Grimes, they went down to the Triangle spring, summer, and fall, and Robert went down there in the wintertime and fished. And Breedehoff's let them use the property. This is before the Grimes family acquired it. And they never, ever asked Ben Chiloa for permission to use that property. If they wanted to use it, they asked Breedehoff's for permission to use it. And Breedehoff's would allow them to use it. And that was the only permission in the case that was testified to. Rod Chiloa.
Did Breedehoff's have to get permission from anyone?
What's that? I'm sorry.
Did Breedehoff's have to get permission from anyone?
There's no evidence that Breedehoff's ever got permission from anyone. Breedehoff's owned the property, either John or Ted, from 1903 down to the time that Ted Breedehoff's daughters deeded it to the Grimeses. And there is no evidence that anybody needed permission from the Chilohas to use the road to get to the property, or that any other access to that property existed. And I think it's telling that Corey Copples, the president of the plaintiff here, took Rod Chiloa to lunch and tried to smooth this over because Harlan Siefkin had offered it for sale. And the K&H fellas had agreed to buy it. Corey, Brad, his brother, Brian Grison, his brother-in-law, and Waylon Leffers had formed this corporation, and they were going to buy this property. So he took Rod to lunch, and he knew Rod was sore about this because Rod had said so openly at a meeting that they had down at the cabin. And he said, isn't there some way we could straighten this out? Wouldn't we, you know, we'd be welcome you as an owner? And Rod said, I'm going to keep you out of that property. I'm going to make it impossible for you to get down there to that acreage. And I don't have to give you anything but a goat trail. Now, that's an interesting remark, a very interesting remark. He's not saying at a moment when he's most heated that you can't use my property to get to your 3 acres or 4 acres. He's saying, I'm going to make it hard for you to do that. I'm going to make it a nuisance. And that's when he made the remark about, all I have to provide you is a goat trail. Now, that doesn't sound like a man who thinks that he has to give them permission to use that road or any road across his property to reach their property. That sounds like a man who recognizes what's been common knowledge in the neighborhood for over 100 years, and that is that that road serves that acreage and no, and Ben Chiloa didn't have to give permission, and Rod didn't have to give permission for them to go across his property to reach it.
So how long had the prescriptive easement been established by the evidence, in your opinion?
Well, Your Honor, I think the rule that governs this case, to answer your question, is the one that appears as one of our propositions of law. And that is, if the plaintiff proves uninterrupted and open use for the necessary period without any evidence to explain how the use began, I see we can't explain that because that's way, way back in 1903. All the memories are dead. The presumption
is raised that the use is adverse under claim of right and the burden is on the owner of the land to show that the use was permissive by a preponderance of the evidence. He didn't show that. He never showed that there was any permission given by his side of the family, except for some speculation to which we objected that Donahue produced. And therefore, once again, I got to agree with Mr. Domina. I don't think that anybody put anything over on Judge Steinke. I haven't seen anybody do that for at least the last 25 years.
And it's your position that felony or felony, however it's pronounced, versus Bay is the guiding principle in this case, notwithstanding that it's rural and not urban?
No, I don't agree with that.
Okay.
I think the guiding principle in this case is a case much older than Filoni versus Bay.
Okay, cited in your brief?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It's under our sixth proposition of law.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moyer.
And thank you, ladies.
And Mr. Domina is out of town, correct? The case is submitted. Counsel is excused.